Don't touch anything on your end.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I can't touch it, though. You told me not to.
I mean...
Do you want to play the music?
You're so literal.
Hello, welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today, not a dumb phone.
No.
But an anti-smartphone.
Anti-smartphone. So it's very smart.
Yes.
But it's against the smartphones.
I was going to say, I know it's being marketed as the anti-smartphone, so I wanted to make sure that that phrase was in there.
But not a dumb phone, yeah.
I wanted to say it's the smarter than smartphone.
That's right.
Because yeah. It kind of is.
Yeah, I think you're right. We had a conversation a couple days ago with Aubrey Anderson, who is the creator of Runcible, which is an intelligent, circular, smart device that does what you need it to do without taking you out of the world. So we'll have him explain that in just a little bit.
Yes.
But first of all, what's new with you? Are you okay?
I think I am.
Okay.
I did that whole like test that doctors do where they shine the light in your eyes to see if your pupils like stay dilated or if they're reactive to light.
Wait, did you stand in front of a mirror?
Yes.
And shine
a
light into your own eyes?
I was in the bathroom mirror.
While attempting to look at your own pupils.
Yes.
Did it work?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my pupils reacted.
Okay. You know? Well, there we go.
Yeah. So all right. That was like the confirmation that I'm pretty sure I didn't get a concussion.
Okay, so... So what
Here's
happened?
Here's the thing. I've gotten hit in the head a lot in my lifetime.
We all know.
So I fall down a lot. It happens. I fall off my bike occasionally.
Occasionally?
Most times I know I'm falling down.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I can't think of a time in which I've fallen off my bike where it's like, come at me at a complete shock.
Okay, so you're prepared to fall off your bike at any point.
any given, okay. Even right now, as I'm sitting in this chair, I'm still prepared to fall off my bike.
Waiting for the shift of gravity with quantum physics.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I guess I just felt like I could always react really well. And I thought I was in this particular case.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those cases where, you know, I was biking off pavement.
Off road,
and my front wheel hit some really soft dirt and just sank right in. And I was already going kind of slow to begin with because I was biking along a sidewalk. I wasn't biking on road.
I turned
off and to get on this. Pardon me. I get on the sidewalk, and I was next to a building, and across the sidewalk in this particular spot was a extension cord, and it wasn't like on the ground where I could just run it over. It was like hanging off a fence, and it was like just kind of right at like face level.
So this is around people.
There wasn't many. It was early in the morning. There wasn't a lot of people around, which in retrospect, I'm glad.
Okay, because my next question was going to be, who saw this happen?
Who saw this happen? As far as I know, nobody saw this happen.
Okay.
Or at least there were like some painters around, but if they saw me fall, they never gave any indication that they saw it.
You know, painters don't care.
I mean,
I think experience is born out. The painters are just busy painting.
They got to do their job.
Yeah.
So there's this extension cord hanging out, and I biked off the sidewalk. I'm already kind of like just coasting at this point.
Uh-huh.
Front wheel hit this piece of patch of dirt that was just soft.
Super soft.
And
it's been warm out.
Yeah.
So you would expect that the ground wouldn't be muddy
at this point. And it wasn't muddy. It was just soft. I might even go so far as to say, like, maybe there was something burrowing under there at some point in time. Like, maybe I ran over some animal's tunnel.
This is like Caddyshack.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so did one of those, like, slow falls.
Not an endo.
No.
Not over the handlebars.
No, it's happened to me a lot more times than probably I should admit to.
Okay.
Where, you know, your bike just gets stuck.
Right.
And you have that, like, half second where you're just standing still and then you tip over.
Kind of like Wile E. Coyote.
Yeah, it is. It's a very Wile E. Coyote moment.
That in-between space.
I have enough time to, like, hold up a sign.
My momentum.
Whoops.
Yes. Acme bicycles.
Yes. Yeah. But here's the thing. Like, so I'm like, well, I'm going down. And I've fallen like that several times. And, you know, it kind of hurts. But I always come right back. On this particular occasion, there happened to be alongside this building, you know, like meters, like gas meter, I would assume.
Metal, yeah.
You know, the big thingities. And it's just, if I were to fall, it's just at head level.
Uh-huh. It's the perfect place.
And yeah, right at the base of my skull.
Oh, man. So you don't know if you blacked out.
I'm pretty sure I didn't.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like I checked the time before I fell and the time after I fell. And, uh-huh. Like, you know, it was like, oh, man, 5 minutes went by.
Right.
But I would imagine if I did pass out, somebody would have had to have seen that.
Well, as I understand, this is a place you're keeping the location of this accident nebulous, but it's a place where people would pass by and
people
notice.
People would pass me by.
Okay. Yeah.
All
right.
Yeah. So, bam, right at the back of the skull. And
right.
And it's
you saw
definitely
stars?
Like, it's no.
No. Okay.
No. That's what didn't worry me.
Right.
Is I got right back up and walked my bike to where, you know, I normally just sit it and went on about my day.
Okay. And this is the point where it's either you realize, oh, I am very hurt, or you think like, well, must have been nothing.
And that was my thought.
It must have been nothing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Right.
I mean, like, I'm not going to say it didn't hurt because it stung. But I was fine most of the morning until I stopped moving.
Okay. And then?
And then it's like, actually in the front of my head.
Ooh.
Like, just feels this crushing pressure.
Okay.
And
are you well hydrated today?
I am now.
Good.
That was another thing I was paying attention to.
At the very least, you want to make sure that, yeah, if your body needs to send fluid somewhere, it can do so.
Yeah. Before I started my day, like right after that happened, I kind of did a short like self-assessment.
Am I okay?
Know? Yeah. Am I all right?
Is my head okay? Is my neck
how much
okay?
pain am I in?
Right.
You know, yeah. Do I have full range?
Right on a scale of 1 to 10.
And that's when I went into the bathroom and like did the whole like.
There we go.
You know, use so, my smartphone. Or
so you determined
my device.
Yeah, you determined you know, that you had a thing. Oh yeah, I see you're doing it now. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you see? I mean,
it's hard for me.
Away.
Yeah. I mean, I believe I can see pupils dilating from here. Yeah. It's a pretty bright light on that device.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what? What's the takeaway from all this? What do you learn from falling on your head?
I learned that maybe I should have walked my bike at that point.
Ah.
You know, I was already on a sidewalk. I probably could have been dismounting or have dismounted by the time I got to. I mean, I saw this. It's a question of how to solve a problem.
Right.
'Cause I saw the extension cord hanging over.
It's just draped out there.
And my thought wasn't, how do I get around this extension cord? How many options do I have to get around this extension cord?
What's the safest way
right,
to get around this extension cord?
My thought was, How do I bike around this extension cord?
Yes. You know? Which I think,
how do
admittedly,
I ride my bike? I mean, yeah, it's. I think it's human.
I would ask the same question.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with it, but it's shown a light on, like, there are many ways to solve one problem.
Yes. Okay. So next time you see some kind of extension cable dangling in your path, what do you do?
Or anything dangling in my path. Maybe open myself to all options as opposed to how do I bike around this? It kind of reminds me about how a lot of times I notice driving a bus.
Yes.
Or even biking.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of drivers, their first reaction is, how do I get around this object in my car?
Swerve.
How do I swerve around? Not, again, like, should I slow down?
Right.
How do I keep from colliding into something else around me while navigating around this space?
And these are good questions. Yeah.
Anyway.
Protecting your space, protecting yourself, and protecting others.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm into all of those things.
Yes. So how you been?
I've been okay. Yeah. I'm back off the hike. I had a little bit of, I WebMD'd myself recently.
Oh, really?
And I may have had a herniated disc last week.
Oh,
not have.
Oh, right.
Just
you
a little bit of back,
like,
pain.
Your back was not feeling well.
Yeah, slipping into bed and realizing that, you know, it feels good to sleep in a bed, but I've also trained myself to sleep on the hard ground. And, too much bed rest, as a matter of fact, makes me feel not as good as I should. So I've just been recovering slowly from that and spent the weekend with my grandpa looking at old family photos. So,
oh, cool.
It was nice and relaxing. I don't have a whole lot of exciting stories to tell.
I could give you my bed, my old bed.
That's true. The board?
Yeah.
That would probably solve my problem.
There you go. It might be a little short for you.
Right.
I cut it to a pretty specific size.
Right. Well, you know what else is cut to a very specific size?
What's that?
The beer mongers.
Beer mongers.
Yes, that store has been arranged precisely to the shape of the room that it's in.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, I'm not drinking beer right now, short of the thought, but I am about to drink some unsweetened iced tea because I had a couple beers already. I feel pretty good. It's not that I'm not drinking. I'm just not drinking more.
Right now.
Yeah.
Oh.
But if say you want one drink, say you want 1,000, they've got them all. There are at least 1,000 cans of beer, I think, at the beer mongers, I would guess.
Mm.
Yeah, down on Southeast Division and 12th.
Yes.
So we recommend you give them a visit. But, Well, one more thing. Trim to its own size.
Yes.
The
hair.
Round and hair. Yours, not mine. But the round phone or anti-phone or whatever it is. The Antiphony.
The anti-smartphone.
That is the Runcible. So let's go to our conversation with Aubrey Anderson right here. So how's your day going?
Well, a lot better than I thought it was going to be going. I was kind of getting ready to write a concession email sort of in the early part of yesterday because we had a really long way to go with our Indiegogo campaign. But we had this like amazing flurry of activity toward the end of the day and pulled in, I think, about $65,000 in about 10 hours.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was totally amazing. And it pushed us over our goal. So it's a very happy occasion. We had a really difficult but very fun night, as it turned out, last night.
Very cool. You're funded. So what is Runcible in a nutshell? How do you describe it to people?
Well, in a nutshell, it is kind of another way to do it. If you think about the mobile space, as I have been doing for several years, we've been kind of stuck in this trough of kind of big centralized app stores, pretty much the same form factor, and very, very few variations in workflow and in kind of industrial design and look and feel. We're pretty much just toting around these big glowing rectangles. So at Mobile World Congress about 3 years ago, I was just kind of walking through these endless halls of pretty much, you know, carbon copy or 99.7% carbon copy of devices. And I just was thinking to myself, like, what else could we do? Like this is starting to be a pretty mature technology. I can't believe that we're making just kind of iPhone copies here 7 or 8 years into the effort. So I started looking at form factors that humans have liked for longer and have had, I guess I would say more nuanced relationships with and more emotional relationships with for over time. And there's this recurrence of form in going all the way back to ancient cultures and up through the Greeks and all the way into both Middle Eastern and Eastern and Western culture, of this circle, this kind of palm sized circle. And so you see it, you see it all over the place in more modern devices like compasses and pocket watches and women's compact. And but all the way back to the, like, I think they call it the Antikythera mechanism, which was this ancient Greek thing that they found on a shipwreck. Pretty much, yeah. a recurrence of that same form, and it seemed to me that people like it. So Runcible is this idea that, well, what if we took the brain of a smartphone, which is now becoming kind of commodity, and tried to jam it into a smaller form factor, and then began to just apply constraint. So the first big constraint was that we wanted to make it round. Which means a bunch of different stuff for the user interface and the user experience, different stuff for what apps that run on it would be allowed to kind of do and be, and also just a different way to kind of interact with the device that is modeled on more passive interfaces, requires less work. So if you think about, like, a clock is actually doing a pretty complicated thing. It's taking this really difficult concept of time and distilling it into this very, very simple interface that you can glance at and understand with a little practice. And so I think as mobile technology matures and devices get better connectivity and the brains in these devices get more capable and our software gets a little more graceful and intelligent, I think we ought to be able to begin to distill some of these things that are really laborious right now. If you think about traversing Twitter, it's really not that pleasant. Information is cool, but, like, I feel like humans are spending 80% of their device time traversing lists or like digging their way through glorified spreadsheets that play music, and it doesn't feel very naturalistic. It doesn't feel very kind of human focused. There's this quote by Johnny Ive at Apple, they asked him why the Apple Watch was square. And he said, well, you know, people mostly just traverse lists on these devices. And so squares are great for list traversal. And,
right. Lists are square. Yeah.
Yeah. To me, I'm like, hey, maybe back up one tick. I'm not throwing shade on him at all, but I think there may have been a wrong turn a right. little bit higher up.
It sounds like it was designed sort of reverse. It was designed for use versus user.
I think that we see that all over the place in the mobile platform. For instance, properties on most mobile devices are not only allowed but kind of encouraged to build value by bothering you.
Yeah, notifications are everywhere.
Yeah, and it's become the kind of the de facto way to stay relevant for all kinds of applications, big and small, because as the funnel has widened with just the total number of sought apps available, even in what are supposed to be semi-curated app store experiences, is just too much content for anybody to kind of track it and pay any attention.
You have to wade through it all and kind of curate your experience. And you spend a lot of time, like you were saying, just kind of managing your lists.
Oh, for sure. And on their side, all they can really do to cut through is to ding at you as often as possible. I mean, Twitter has started telling me when, like, people I follow somebody else, and I'm like, I don't care who that person is following.
Like, I don't care about this person anyways. I followed them for different reasons. Yeah.
This is maybe just you trying to think of another excuse to put up a notification.
Right.
And you can turn your notifications off, but that's sort of not immediately obvious to less sophisticated users of these devices.
Well, you notice like parents, I don't want to pick on parents, but like the older generation above us, I think, is enraptured with the immediacy of information, but they're also really bad at figuring out how to manage those lists. So people our age and younger, I think, are maybe pretty good at like, I can make the phone do what I want to do. But maybe for an older generation, people are used to like, it comes out of the box and this is what it does. And so I remember just like hanging out with my mom or my in-laws and thinking like, they're so distractible.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think it's also just a modality that we've all pretty much passively sunk into.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We just sort of took it as, well, that's the way the world is going now.
Yeah, because and it's kind of rooted. I mean, like desktop computer interfaces are based on a physical analog of a desktop, you know, and there's folders and stuff. I think a lot of the things in the mobile space kind of harken back to the telephone and the idea that the phone gets your attention by ringing and, you know, some of these basic connections, even though we don't really think of it as a phone anymore, they're kind of rooted in maybe the first wave of mobile telephony, where we were T9ing and the thing would ring at you. And so that now that we're running like extremely sophisticated, artificially intelligent software on these same kind of clients, their modality is actually still just sort of the same, like, hey, you got a message. And it's forgivable because stuff is really hard to imagine and invent. And it's really risky for big companies and they have to spend a lot of money to innovate, and that comes with a lot of risk, which they hate. And so, I mean, I think it's perfectly understandable how we ended up in this trough, but I think more and more it's becoming clear to regular people that the walls of the cliff are pretty high and it's getting harder to see the sunrise and set. And there's a lot of great statistics, which you can kind of track about like app installs and there's a marked decline in the last couple of years, in people's willingness to install new applications and traverse the app stores. And I saw one figure, which I was really moved by, which is people who have a device that's more than 6 weeks old tend to install between 0 and 1 apps per month. which is not a lot. And if you think about all the kind of poor developers who are hooked into these app systems and have been not sold a bill of goods per se, but been kind of led down a garden path where they can just have an idea and make an app for it and somehow pay their mortgage with that. I think we're exiting that era. Mm. But I don't see a lot of other people, other options.
Uh-huh.
So that's a very, very, very long way to say that Runcible is an experiment in like, how else might we do it? What else could a mobile device do and be? If we change the form factor and add constraint, is that pleasant for people's lives? Like, can we actually make a device that distills this, your digital life, and lets you keep your head up and out more? And lets you talk to the people at your dinner table rather than texting while you're sitting with people at the dinner table.
Yeah.
And just kind of return to something that is a little bit more humanistic. And I contrast this with a kind of a Luddite anti-technology move. It's not that.
Smash them all. Yeah.
An attempt to use technology in a different and more graceful way and acknowledge that the processors on these devices are incredibly fast. Artificial intelligence in the cloud and on device is now getting actually functional and capable. As more devices get connected, things should get easier and more automated and more graceful. But I'm not sure if we're stuck in this model where that's really rooted in telephony and kind of first wave mobile devices. I think we need to make a jump from that.
It seems like we've got a lot of really smart technology kind of with, for lack of a better term, kind of dumb applications for it. You know, we're asking, like, you go back to the idea of, like, original telephony, and we're asking this artificial intelligence to mimic technology that, you know, is what? That's over 100 years old.
Right. It's quite literally the least it could do.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm intrigued by the idea of constraint, because one of the big selling points that mobile devices have is, like, you've got infinity in your pocket. You know, you've got access to everything and anything you can imagine. So I'm interested as to, like, why you went the other way. And, you know, I've got my own theories on this, but I want to hear how you developed that.
Well, I think you see it all over the place. I mean, like, why do bands' third records suck? You know, the first and second records, they're generally operating under a fairly high amount of constraint, whether that's equipment or finances or having to hold down other jobs or whatever it is. They're running up against these constraints pretty frequently. And those constraints generally produce interestingness when it comes to art. If you know the art of Matthew Barney, for instance, he's become sort of an art star, but his whole thesis is around the creative efforts without constraint just pretty much produce goop. And he uses a lot of like petroleum media to kind of explore that topic. It's very fascinating stuff. Maybe pair that with what I think you can kind of track as a sine wave that runs through consumer electronics around features and size and stuff like that. I think things tend to expand and contract at a fairly regular intervals. The guy that invented Java, James Gosling, I think is his name. He says there's two ways to make money in technology. One is bundling and one is unbundling. and he's being kind of cynical there, but it really is sort of true. We see these, okay, it's the PC era. Everything's getting packed into this one thing. It's on your desk and your whole life is there. And then that kind of explodes into pagers and cell phones and other kind of connected devices and in the sort of first wave there. And then when smartphones and the iPhone came out, I think we saw a great rebundling of capabilities and functionality that had been spread across two or three devices. You now don't need a music player and a phone and something else to do your step counting. You can do all that in one device.
It's called a pedometer. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that we're in at the kind of cusp of another unbundling.
The great unbundling. Yeah.
I look at projects like what Magic Leap is doing, for instance, and the kind of different people pursuing VR and augmented reality stuff. And
is that what Magic Leap is? I'm not familiar.
Well, they're kind of a big secret, but if you dig a little bit,
okay,
you'll get at least a sense of what they're up to.
I see.
But they're not the only ones in the space either. A whole lot of people, I think, are running at this idea that maybe you shouldn't be staring at this one screen all the time.
Sure. And
maybe there are some other ways for you to get information about what's going on around you.
I'm also curious. It sounds like you've put a ton of thought into how people use devices. Like, it's not you probably could have taken a different path and made possibly a more popular product if you were willing to be more mainstream, but you're kind of bucking a lot of trends with around anti-smartphone. And I'm curious, number one, maybe what, like, philosophically, how did you start thinking about this? And two, maybe tie it together. Do you have any experiences where you realized you were, like, super disconnected from people and that made you want to make something different?
Yeah, it's, you know, and that's linked to the constraint as well. One of the, in that same time period, 2 or 3 years ago, I went to like 3 dinners in a row with old friends. And every single one of them had this period where we just sort of went into this fugue where everybody was on their devices and not talking anymore. And that was a part of the catalyst. And I think I would, at the time I was thinking like, I wonder how we could let our devices know that we're having a real experience and
I'm at dinner. Don't bother me.
Yeah. We don't want to get pulled in. And that, you know, that's a fraught path because we're not quite at the intelligence level with devices where they can see that you're with an old friend. And so they shouldn't bother you unless it's like a real emergency.
Sure.
I think we can expect to get there at some point soon. Like Google is running pretty hard at that type of contextual predictive stuff. But there's a pretty significant interim period where to me, it seemed like we could affect a lot of the same results with just constraint.
Yeah.
Just make a device that when your context changes as a person, you take this device with you and that ensures that you are not bothered.
Like if all you want to do is count your steps, you just take a pedometer along.
Yeah. Or maybe you could have a multifunctional device, but it comes with these baseline rules that let you understand whether or not it's the appropriate thing for you in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm going to dinner with my friends. I could take my phone, but instead I'll take a Runcible device because that will solve a problem if I have one, but otherwise leave me alone.
Okay. Yeah. So this is the idea that you might have a smartphone, you might be into it, but you might also choose to leave that phone behind so that you just have a thing that does what you need.
Yeah. And there's kind of a work consideration there too, because that's the other thing about bundling is that eventually your work finds its way into the bundle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably at least 2/3 of my interactions on my smartphone today are work related. And so if I have my smartphone, I'm kind of always at work. And that's certainly not a good thing. I mean, we see like in France, they're criminalizing sending email on the weekends.
Is that right?
Yeah. Like people are starting to go, hey, wait a minute. Like, let's be at work. And of course, Americans will be the very last to come to that because we love to work.
Right.
But I don't know that holding work related stress on Tuesday at 11 PM is a super good thing for your body.
Productivity.
Or even your productivity.
Or health. Yeah. Yeah.
There's lots of studies that show like a 30-hour work week is a very productive 30 hours and a 60-hour work week is a somewhat unproductive 60 hours that may amount to less actual work than the 30 hours. But there, I think we're in the midst of kind of the opposite trend now where, again, technology rather than solving problems, it's just made us more accessible. And so the problems can find us easier. And our kind of mean level of productivity is expected to just be higher, not the same with less work.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I could go super commie on that and talk about the failings of the growth economy and all that stuff, but that's too much to bite off.
Sure.
I'm just like, I like the software stack. I like what's happening technologically in mobile devices. And I like the connectivity and I like that I can like use my mobile device to start to turn my lights on and off. This is the start of something that could be really wonderful. But for me, I need to make sure that the kind of focus and control is still in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm handing things off to these kind of automated recipes, as hopefully we all will pretty soon, it's a very conscious and intentional thing, and is not sort of also mixed up with like an ad for Amazon.
Right.
Yes.
Well, advertising is a big piece of phones bothering us and intrusions into what would otherwise be just you doing one thing.
Yep, that's or at least two things. But yeah, I think that that's another kind of byproduct of kind of where we are with properties building value on mobile devices, because the easiest thing to do is not create a bunch of cool new features. It's just to keep the features you have let advertisers Trojan horse themselves into those features and then spawn notifications. I mean, like Twitter is such a prime example of that, or Facebook certainly, or any of the sort of ancillary Facebook properties like Instagram. It's a thing that people want to do, and because it's a way to stay socially connected and stuff like that, and there's good results there, but it's a field day for advertising and stuff like that.
Could I take a step sideways for a moment, because I heard a phone buzzing in the background. I'm just curious how you were processing that as you were talking to us.
Oh, it's gross. Yeah, it's like...
And it's okay. I'm not offended or anything.
No.
I'm just curious, since we're talking about kind of how we deal with those things. Like, what was going through your mind?
Well, and I think that it's a great example, because it's like the myth of the put your phone on silent thing. Because even if your phone is on silent, if it's buzzing,
it's not really silent.
And it sort of retracts your brain and your thought process. And if you don't lose the thread, you at least compromise it in some way.
I thought you did very well, though. your train of thought was very focused, so well done.
I survived.
I think there was one of the early things, like when I first heard about Runcible, this round anti-smartphone, I heard one of the selling features, I think, on the promo was like, what if instead of looking at a map on a rectangle, what if you had a compass in your hand? You say, I want to go here, and then you get a needle that points to the thing you want to go to. Is that still part of the package?
It is, yeah. We're working on pretty high concept stuff in the compass. It actually becomes a star map when you point it at the sky.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be really cool.
That's awesome.
Some of these parts are like really hard.
Yeah.
But we're staying with it because it's going to be a really different way to wander around the world. I think in an early interview about Runcible, I was like, our goal is not to be a utility and give you the quickest way from here to there. We want to try to show you the most interesting way. Hmm. And if we get you lost, that's part of it.
So add 5 minutes to your travel time.
Yeah. And also make sure that it's use appropriate. If you have a meeting in 20 minutes, that's probably a smartphone workflow you want.
Sure.
If you are wandering through Barcelona and have 2 free hours, it's probably us.
If you want a mystical stone to tell you, hey, there might be something interesting in this direction.
Exactly.
Yeah. I just like that idea, though, because I think I've been there, I've done this, and I've seen a lot of other people like wandering through, like Portland gets a lot of tourism and visitors these days, and I see a lot of people like trying to find like where is that donut place, and so there's all these people walking around with a square in front of their face, and it seems like one of the big central concepts of Runcible is how do you get your head up so you're looking around as opposed to buried in some sort of information.
For sure, yeah. In all cases, making things glanceable and distilled so that when you do come down to the device with your eyes, it's a simple kind of gestalt of
right.
That way. It's not a
turn left here in 3 miles, turn right. And
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a lot to process just at a glance. And if you're driving, like that's a really dangerous proposition.
Yeah, I'm talking to a motorcycle brand right now about essentially having Runcible embedded as a kind of drop-in gauge for
cool.
Motorcycle. Really?
Like a heads-up display?
Yeah, exactly. It kind of plays for bicycles as well. You could you just sort of lock the device on to the the gooseneck and get these kind of simple distilled things. Maybe you'd preload it, or maybe we could track bicycle routes in your city, but also give you kind of speed and distance and calories, and there's a number of things that we could probably pull together or coordinate with other devices that were on your bike or on your body, and give you a kind of an interesting but still very high level picture of what's happening in the way that the speedometer gives you actually another sort of distillation of a lot of things that your car is doing that you don't necessarily care about. You really just want to know whether or not you're under or above the speed limit.
Can it go? Yeah.
I love the idea of this. You kind of walk out to your bike and sort of lock it into a dock and your back wheel charges it and off you go.
That's a great idea. I like this. Yeah. And it's been interesting watching people because obviously you can get bicycle handlebar mounts for smartphones and that sort of thing. But distracted bicycling is about as dangerous as distracted driving in that if you're looking too long at one thing, you miss what you might be running into or someone you might hurt or something like that. So again, that distilled information, if you need to know like one or two things and you can look down and get that small bit of information, that seems like a great feature. I was curious... just as far, you mentioned notifications earlier. Do you have a least favorite notification?
You know, I think that what Twitter's doing currently is the most egregious thing I've seen. Like right now, it like throws up this split pane panel where it gives me sort of half of one person's tweet and half of another person's tweet.
Oh.
Neither of which are relevant to me. but so, that, you know, that's a byproduct of them going public and having to figure out how to make money and all that stuff. That's one of the worst ones right now. If you look at, I don't know if you have an Android device, but, if you let Google Now do its thing, it really goes nuts as well, because they're trying to be predictive for you. But it's not quite smart enough to understand the context.
Is this what you mean? How about this?
Exactly. Or like
Robin Williams in an app.
Totally. It's Saturday at 8:45 and it's like, hey, traffic is a little heavier than normal to your work. And I'm like, well, hey, it's Saturday.
You should know, of all people, Google.
Right, yeah. Exactly. They're like, well, at Google, we don't take the weekends off. So
and we have a delicious cafe. Yes. Yeah. I remember I've talked about this on our show a long time ago, but a long time back, like I want to say 04, 05, when I was carrying a smartphone, I had, a flip phone way back in the day. And I was just starting to think about the intrusion of telephones and people calling. And that was even before I was really into text messaging. But I remember there were times when, kind of like as a spectacle and to entertain my friends, if I was disturbed while I was hanging out with someone, I would take the phone out of my pocket and throw it across whatever space I found. Did you have a similar experience? Like what was the genesis, you think, that got you started thinking about distraction with phones?
I think in the really old days, I had this sort of revelation with my, you know, Nokia Series 60.
Great snake game on that phone.
It had a silent button. So it like had this thing where if you just kept hitting down on the volume, eventually it would just shut up.
Ah.
And it was totally revelatory after a couple of years of, you know, the phone ringing in the movie theater and like on dates and in meetings, I was just like, oh, I can just turn this one off. This is so cool. That experience certainly stayed with me. I think everyone has that common story too about how they went on vacation and they had no cell coverage and it was so awesome.
Yeah.
And early on I was like, well, why can't you opt into that? Shouldn't that be something you can always take with you and stay in the city that you like?
like you shouldn't have to go to the woods to be disconnected.
Experience, maybe, I don't know, but, I my friend is a neuroscience guy and he studies addiction as well. And he has this great statistic about substance abuse and substance addiction. And they measure, one of the ways they measure like how fucked you are is the delta between when you wake up and when you engage in the behavior. So like for smokers, if you literally wake up and light a cigarette, you're in much worse shape in addiction wise. And your brain is much more locked into the pattern than if you wake up and go about your day and have a cigarette in the late morning. So if you sort of map that over to smartphone use, it's interesting to think about. A lot of people have smartphones by their bed. And it is the last thing they do before they shut their eyes and the first thing they do when they open their eyes, which, you know, Facebook could not be happier about. But I'm not sure about if the human race is benefiting from this.
I think I'm fucked under your definition.
Yeah,
definitely. Oh, we were just talking to one of our listeners. Hey, how about that?
Look at that.
Sorry.
How about that?
Yeah, that was my wife calling from the train. Are you still there, Aubrey? Damn it. Hang on. Oh, There, Aubrey, are you still there?
I still am.
I apologize. Okay. That was my wife calling from the train on the phone that I'm using to contact you tonight. So there we go. I told her to wait. But we were talking about a guy who decided that he was done with smartphones by the bed, or smartphones in the bedroom. I think he decided he was going to get a physical alarm clock, and that was how he would choose to wake up in the morning.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's interesting, I think, to think about like what place does it have, and again, like if it is an addiction model, like how long can you hold it off, and what does that say about your state?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to ponder. I have tried a couple of times to instate a no phones in the bedroom rule, and have failed miserably.
Yeah.
As I think just about everybody has. I have some friends who are doing okay with that, and I think it's helping. Their relationship is better, and I don't know, but this is all irresponsibly anecdotal type of evidence, but it is. I think it comes back to how you want your life to be. And your kind of smart device, whatever it is, ought to be working with you, or ideally even for you. I feel like in the last 5 years in particular, that has really swung over to the other side, where we're being driven by work with the smartphone as a vehicle. We're being driven by social network activity or apps or whatever. It's hard to find a game that doesn't periodically notify you about coming back to the game.
Right. Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was supposed to be a diversion.
Point.
I'm being notified by my diversion.
You need to buy more farms or something.
Right. Exactly. I don't think there's a big evil brain behind the whole thing, pushing all this into reality. I think it's just very much a byproduct of the way that, the way that Apple first set up the store, and they were actually driven by a good intent. They were like, oh, how do we keep a bunch of crapware and stuff off of people's devices? Maybe we should curate this, as they like to curate everything. And I don't think that's a bad intention. But taken down the path, we're seeing all these kind of interesting and probably unintended consequences just about how apps differentiate themselves and how they stay relevant to you. And it has meant, I mean, my phone would just ding continuously if I allowed it to.
Right. And I'm sure you've taken many steps to make sure it doesn't.
The highly pared down version is still multiple times per hour.
Right. It's like the methadone, if there's an analogy there, I suppose.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And it would be easier, like you were saying, if there was one villain you could point to and say, it's all your fault. But really, as Beetle Bailey said, we have seen the enemy and it's us. So,
yes.
Yeah.
It's highly organic. I mean, and a lot of this stuff is just driven by the way the tech industry works and sees the world. And it's I think, very organic and not diabolical, although the results are potentially kind of diabolical.
Yeah, like if you you can have a good compost pile or a bad compost pile. An amazing, wonderful tasting salad that you grew in your garden is organic, but then just leaving all these clippings and things to turn into mud, that's also organic. So it could go either way, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's about curation and paying attention. And I think increasingly I keep coming back to this idea of basic constraint in the interface and in the approach. If you set up some basic constraints, then that actually informs, just as a design principle, that informs everything else that follows.
Right. Aaron, did you have any other questions about Runcible?
I wonder how much, as you explain this, because this is very, for lack of a better term, kind of an antisocial way of coming at technology. And I don't mean that as an insult. I apologize. But I wonder what kind of resistance you've come into and how you've responded to that.
Well, it's interesting. It is seen from one way, it is an extremely social way.
yes. Well, yeah. Yeah. For a lot of us, it is, but as far as the way I would say the general public views technology, and the way this product or this device, I don't know, like works, I don't want to say against that, but at least works in a way to limit a lot of that connectivity. I can imagine people like reacting to it. And so I'm just wondering, like, if you've had any kind of reactions in that realm.
It's interesting. I think most of the reactions that we've had, it's my daughter.
Yeah.
Most of the reactions we've had have been ranged kind of from positivity to relief.
Oh, cool.
At least the ones that people tell us about. I imagine the people who are just made furious by this, we don't really hear from. So I don't really have any way to judge how many of people.
Nobody's come up to your booth and said, like, why do you hate freedom so much?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's interesting how little pro status quo feedback we've ever had. I talked to one guy who's like, well, you know, I use my phone for work, and if it didn't ring, I'd get in trouble at work. And I was like, well, you probably need to stay where you are for work, but you know, how often do you want to be at work?
right. And that's the question we keep coming back to, is like, how much do you want to carry with you, and how much do you want to leave yourself open so you have that opportunity? Yeah,
totally. There's I don't know, this is maybe too esoteric a comment, but they're the band, the Arcade Fire, has this song a couple albums back where they I think he says it may sound strange that we used to wait for letters to arrive. Mm. But what's even stranger is that something like that can actually keep you alive.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great lyric.
Yeah. This sort of idea that like it's okay to not have immediate gratification. It's not a bad thing. And people who study the younger generation, that I don't even know if they have a snarky label for those people yet. the sub millennials, maybe they'll call them teenies.
Could be.
They have parties where you have to put your phones in a bowl.
Yes. I've heard about this. Yeah.
Which to me is really delightful. I culture ebbs and flows. And I think it's worth thinking that if you look around at the device that you have today, for the next generation, this is your father's phone.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want your father's phone. you might think it's quaint or associate a certain amount of, I don't know what, you might defer to it in some ways, but generationally, nobody wants to do what their parents are doing.
Sure.
It's just a thing. And so I think that's another sort of interesting thing to ponder as well.
So when the iPhone becomes my parents' phone, then I want the Runcible.
Well, maybe. I mean, yeah. You might. Something that we don't know what it is yet, but Runcible is not trying to be a device messiah. We're really just trying to be another counterpoint, if you like.
Yeah,
sure.
And what I'm hoping, and I think what we see kind of cropping up, is that because it's also a platform, it's a place where you can inject your idea and have it play out. So if you want to do something interesting on a fixie bike and you think that a smartphone mounted on a fixie bike is just poor design and feels funny, Runcible can help you solve that problem. And we can do that in a wholesale way.
Right. There we go. Yeah.
If you are kind of at your limit with the way that smartphones operate in your life, Runcible can help you solve that problem. If you just want like another device to take with you and take pictures, we can solve that problem too. So I think we've had a hard time messaging around the device because it's kind of, it can do anything. But the caveat is that it can do anything with these basic design constraints.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. One is a lack of corners. So yeah. It would be difficult, I suppose, I can't imagine trying to text on a round screen, but I'm sure you've given that some thought about whether or not you wanted to have any sort of feedback, sort of like can you type on this thing?
You can. Yeah, we have a keyboard that is just a kind of a soft keyboard, which is a slight modification of the keyboard that comes with the Android open source project. And we have another partnership that we're poking at, which is some people that have written another mechanism to enter text for wearables.
Okay.
So I think there will be a couple of different ways to enter text. But it's a workflow thing. I think if you're sitting there typing a lot on this thing, we've failed somewhere farther up.
It's not exactly for that.
Yeah, there may be cases where you got to do it, but hopefully we can solve those problems in a more holistic way at a higher level before you have to drop into the weeds and do a lot of data entry.
Right, right. Very cool. So is there anything people should know about Runcible we haven't talked about yet?
Well, shameless plug. I think we have about it will live on. We've met our goal on the Indiegogo. Ooh. There, and it will live on for at least a couple more weeks. So, in something that they call in demand.
In demand.
In demand. You can see how I bristle at all marketing.
Yes.
But if people hear about it and are interested, it's a place to get more information. You can just search for Runcible on Indiegogo and you'll find it. There's videos of the device and me blathering on about it. And you can kind of get a sense of what it is that we're up to. And if you want to participate, that's an easy way to do it. And that'll close out in, like I say, probably a couple of weeks. And then we're going to go build the thing.
There you go.
Sort of finish building the thing, at which... we're trying to figure out to what extent we want or need to go dark during that time. I want to keep the device available, but at some point I got to, you know, like put in the order and send it to manufacturing.
And buckle down and choose all the final particulars.
Totally. And then, I guess the only other thing is that we're, as if the regular idea isn't crazy enough, we're trying to build this as sustainably as possible. So this is one of the first attempts at a completely sustainable, or as completely sustainable as is currently possible in the industry, mobile device. So we're building it in California. We're sourcing California wood for the backs sustainably from Mendocino County.
And those are beautiful.
There's a bunch of hippie stuff in here that we're that I think translates to value. And also brings American manufacturing into it. Returns the silicon to Silicon Valley. We're essentially doing what Apple did in their first couple of years.
Yeah.
And building it in our backyard or as close to it as we can find. There are a lot of components that go into a mobile device that currently we can't do anything about. But my hope is that by at least starting the conversation about sustainability and being really transparent about our supply chain, we can, who knows, maybe shame people into acting better. Sort of the exhaust of the smartphone industry is pretty gross. And I mean that in the largest possible sense. Yeah, like,
of course,
recycling on these is very low. Repairability is often very low. Cracking one component failing generally means you have to throw out the whole damn thing. Sometimes, and there's some wonderful exceptions to that, but as a rule, it's pretty grim. And we're making literally billions with a B of these devices annually. So it's something that I, you know, as long as we're doing something basically impossible, I figured we'd add in this extra really hard thing.
It's worth thinking about for sure. Yeah. And so to appropriate a slogan, we could say the Runcible is like a bicycle for your attention.
Ooh, I like it.
Very cool. And again, a Google search will bring it up. Just to touch on it quickly, the word Runcible, how did you come up with the name?
It makes a couple of appearances in my life. There's a nursery rhyme, which I think is Edward Lear. It's kind of a Victorian nursery rhyme, which he just uses it as a nonsense word adjective. He talks about a runcible spoon.
The runcible spoon, yeah.
And it doesn't mean anything at all.
There's also a runcible cat.
And then more recently, the writer Neal Stephenson has one of my favorite novels of all time. It's called The Diamond Age. And that's kind of a meditation on why some people become interesting and other people don't. That's about as succinct a summary as I could do, but
it's quite distilled. Yes.
A lot of important stuff. But, so there's a project in that novel that is codenamed Runcible. That started as this device's code name as well. We may at some point actually give it a brand name, but as it's kind of a open source, open-ended project, we just figured keeping that name, it just felt appropriate.
Sure.
Right on.
Yeah, it's like the Kleenex or whatever. It's like everybody calls it a Kleenex, even if it's not a Kleenex.
Yeah, we sort of inadvertently backed into a brand word. Oops. I didn't expect people to kind of verb it or use it in the way that they've been using it, but right. I certainly don't mind.
Very good. Very good. Well, Aubrey Anderson, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Really appreciate all this. It's fascinating, and it's something people should think about. Again, we'll direct people to the Indiegogo on our website, but thank you so much for your time.
Fantastic. Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me, and I'll let me know when it posts, and I'll spread the word if I can.
Certainly will. Yeah, and we will spread the word by posting it. So, yeah.
Awesome.
That can only mean one thing.
Wait, what?
It's time for our headlines.
Yes.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Hey, we've got a calendar.
We do. We got some things happening.
And let me put the call out again. If there are things coming up that people should know about, not just in Portland, not just in Oregon, not just in the United States, but anywhere that you can hear the sound of our voices, let us know. We will promote those things forward so more people can hear them.
Yeah, especially if we can get free tickets to that thing.
That's right. First of all, in Portland, Oregon.
I'm kidding.
I'm not.
First up, July 30th, Pi-a-thon.
Pi-a-thon, yes.
And I was just recently enlightened as to how the Pi-a-thon was going to go, because I thought it was like you brought a pie.
Like a pie potluck.
Like, yeah.
Now, there is a pie artist. Candace is the baker of pies. She is a neighbor of my friend who's putting on the show, the festival, the party, and she's making a shit ton of pies, so it's going to be free.
Does she have like a giant oven?
I don't think so.
How does one go? Well, we will find out.
We will.
You will find out at the Pi-a-thon.
Right. We're going to talk to some interesting people because we're going to be doing a live version of the Sprocket podcast, a little 30-minute session there. So if you want to show up, if you want to be there when we do crowd work, and you want us to work on you, we will.
Hey, nice shirt.
Where are you from? What do you do for work? that's Pi-a-thon. Anyways, we'll have details there. But that is Saturday, July 30th here in Portland, Oregon for free.
Yes. And there will be music. There will be pies.
That's right. Oh, and my band Lumberjack is playing.
Oh.
Amongst other musicians.
Brock's band.
Yeah.
My band is not playing.
That's true.
Coming up, August 11th. Pam Nichols art show at Western Bike Works in Tigard at 6 p.m.
Art inspired by the metal cowboy, Joe Kermaski.
Yes. If you can make it out to Tigard, which really, it's not that far. What is that, like 30, 20 miles?
You know, in the grand scheme of things, it is not as far as many other major cities are from you. Yeah.
You could bike out there.
You could and should.
6 p.m., Western Bike Works, Tigard. And August 14th, everyone's favorite event.
Yes.
That's a scavenger hunt.
Bike Scout. It's going to be amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I haven't thought of a theme for our team yet, though.
A theme, yes. We have new costumes coming this year. And
five of us.
It's entirely up to you what they're going to be. So, I mean,
it's entirely up to me.
I thought it was. You're kind of in charge of Team Sincerity's costuming. Let's all wear something that's green.
The chairman of costuming.
Let's all wear some bright colors, shall we? Aaron Flores, how do you feel about that? Nope, I didn't think so. Yeah. So anyways, we're going to go out and look for stuff.
I don't think we could get best costume. So many people have like brought their A games.
I don't think you should write it off right away.
Oh, okay.
But yes, that's a thing.
Coming up. No, nothing. We've got nothing
also,
else on the calendar.
A large blank space on the calendar. But again, if you know of things that are happening, you want people to know about them, tell us. We'll tell the rest. We got some headlines.
We do. First up, from TheVerge.com, this came to us from Logan Smith. These ultra-tough socks almost stopped me wearing shoes.
If you could replace your shoes with socks, would you? If wearing them out was no option?
I found this very interesting because you see, like, socks are kind of a thing for me.
Yes, they are.
You know? But in the meantime, I also, like, feet are kind of not a thing for me.
You don't have any?
I kind of wish I didn't.
You're not into them.
I'm not into feet.
You're like an anti-fetishist.
Feet are kind of gross to me. And this was a very interesting review of this product. So first, I'll read the blurb here. Skinners are basically stretchy socks with a super tough rubbery material on the underside.
Yeah.
They made more sense than either shoes or socks in certain situations. On a plane, for instance, they're the perfect thing to slip into. At the gym, they offer more grip than socks and a more natural position for lifting weights, which can be thrown off by shoe heels.
Ah.
Yes.
So if you're a weightlifter, these are the shoe socks for you.
Apparently, yes. These are the shoe socks, yes. See, these are the shoe socks you've been looking for. He also went on in this is a really interesting read, actually. He went on to talk about how he wore them for like weeks straight and like washed them like after 3 or 4 days of wear. And that's what really gets to me.
Okay, right. Like, so this is thoroughly gross in your mind.
Yes, this is disgusting.
Okay, well, it's not for everybody.
I guess, yes. Though he says, like, what really surprised me was that these never smelled.
Yeah.
To which my first reaction is to, like, be like, bullshit.
They, in fact, probably did smell. You were just not aware of it, sir. They also make the claim that they are not intended to replace shoes, even though they are super tough. So
yes.
I think maybe that's a legal thing.
Oh, yeah.
But it sounds like this guy put it through the paces, as it were.
Yeah. I mean, we all know how well the Vibram... what is it? Five-fingered shoe went.
Oh, man. I wear mine every day.
No, didn't they like have to like they had to give people their money back?
I think they might have for erroneous claims about foot health.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. People were actually injuring themselves.
They still make them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do.
You can still get yourself some.
I think so. I could be wrong. Don't trust me on that.
I'm very intrigued by this now.
But you could have toe socks that are also shoes. or you can have socks that are just regular shoes. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a thing.
It's a thing that we didn't know we had before.
Thank you, Logan.
We have it now.
Yeah, yes. I appreciate it. The more you know.
This was at the very least an entertaining read for me.
The more you know. Yeah.
Next up, the Biketown contract forces users to waive their legal rights unless they act quickly.
Portland has bike share, which is good news.
Yes.
It's bad news, though, if you want to sue them when you get hurt.
Yes. Nike sponsors this or marketed this.
They're at least branding it.
Yes,
yeah.
Or branding it. The people who run it, it's Motivatico. Is I think the name of the company, if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
I don't know them from much.
I've never heard of them until now.
I don't know if they're big business in the bike share business or not. But.
Or, yeah, who knows? Anyways, buried in the miscellaneous section of the user agreement for Portland's new bike sharing system is a notice that Biketown users are waiving their rights to a jury trial.
A jury trial.
Unless, that is, they sent a one-line email to the company that operates Biketown within 30 days of first using the system.
Okay.
If they don't, a prominent Portland bike lawyer says their chances of winning any future legal claim against Biketown are slim.
That's a very interesting prospect.
Yes.
There are going to be a bunch of waived rights people riding around on bicycles.
Right. Well, yeah. And it's one of those things. How many people read the user agreements for any given product?
I read 90% of the user agreement like 45% of the time. depending on what I'm working with and everything. Yeah.
I read 0% of the user agreement 100% of the time.
If it's a lease, if it's like, here's your rental lease, like, here's what you can do. I read that pretty closely.
I don't even think I read that.
What if I want to grow geraniums and they say no geraniums? If there's a clause.
I'll keep it on hand and reference it.
Before you plant geraniums?
If I want to do something.
Okay, right.
But I'm thinking like, well, is this going to break my lease? Let's check this out.
Sure. Could I possibly rent space in the garage, sublet rent space in the garage to people who want to like roller skate in it or something?
Right.
Could I do that? Covered in the lease. Sublet, yeah.
You would already know this. I would have to go, well, give me a couple days to find that in the lease.
Yeah. But never have I seen in any contract like you're waiving all of your rights to
your legal rights
to a jury trial.
I don't know. Have you read the iTunes agreement?
Well, you know, it's been a while.
I've never read that thing.
I'm never in a good position
to
read the iTunes
agreement. What I've agreed to by using this piece of rectangle.
I guess we deserve what we get.
Exactly. It goes on to say, fortunately for Biketown users who happen to know the secret, which means all of you now, the Biketown contract makes it easy for a member to retain those legal rights. Within 30 days of first using Biketown, the contract says they have to send an email to legal@motivatico.com with the subject line arbitration and class action waiver opt-out.
That's interesting because it's an opt-out of your waiving of your rights. So well, you're opting out of the clause that it's just a great
example of legalese kind of like, you know, using its vagueness and its, what am I trying to say? The fact that it's a very defined jargon or a very narrowed use of jargon.
They're using their magical powers to take advantage of those who don't pay attention.
Do you want to opt out of arbitration?
Well, that's the thing.
I don't know.
It's a double negative.
Do I want to opt out? Because arbitration sounds like I need someone to arbitrate for me.
Right.
You are wrong.
I represent myself.
Yes, you want to opt out of arbitration.
You know what else is a double negative?
What's that?
There's a great mashup on the internet of the Bee Gees, Staying Alive, and AC/DC's Back in Black. Okay. Both of those things are negatives. Put them together, you get a positive. It's pretty fantastic.
I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah. I should put a link to that on the website. It's pretty great.
I won't stop you.
I want to make you watch it.
Okay.
After I check your retinas.
That's right. This could be the thing to throw me over the edge, you know. Who knows? I'm not over this maybe not concussion.
Oh,
I didn't tell you this.
What's that?
I made the mistake of telling Anna. Well, not a mistake. I shouldn't say it like that.
You told your partner something?
I told Anna, like, hey, I think I might have a concussion.
Oh.
And
get all the facts.
Out of all love and affection, she was like, all right, I'm coming over. Don't think I won't, like, come over with a cargo bike to come get you.
Yeah. Well, that's love right there.
Yeah, man.
I'll scoop you up and put you on this long tail and carry you home. That's great.
Yes, that was great, but it was a little bit worrying because I'm like, I gotta finish working here.
Right. Well, we have an absence of double negatives.
Yes.
But you know what we don't not have?
What don't we have? First up, from Christy, I believe, Kaster.
Sounds right.
Friend of the show.
More than a friend. She supports us.
Supporter.
Heavily.
Friend of the show. Werner's is the best ginger ale.
Yes.
And yes, I'm from Michigan originally.
The Midwest weighs in.
They come out in droves.
They weighed in a lot.
Yes. Coming up from Todd in Helena, Montana. Guys, Wait, does he say Helena or Helena?
Helena, I believe.
Is it Helena?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Guys, my grandparents and relatives all lived, and many still live, in the Detroit-Toledo area. Hey, we're neighbors. I was also raised on Werner's and recall that when I was not feeling well, it was either Vicks VapoRub externally or Werner's internally that cured me, or in rare occasions, generous applications of both.
Don't mix that up, though.
No.
internal application of Vicks vapor rub and external rub
and
of
just,
burners.
It just stays in there, and you're like, all day.
Yeah, yeah. But no, those are some cure-all factors,
yes,
I think. Yeah.
Yes. He says, thanks for the push down memory lane and for reminding me that after my first century ride ever, the Missouri River Scenic Century, I need to have something cold and iced down in the cooler to celebrate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's pass good luck and best wishes into the past.
Yeah.
Because at this point,
Todd
has no doubt
this.
Done his first century.
Yes.
Well,
Todd, congratulations.
How did it go? Yeah.
Yes. Look, what did you end up drinking? Because it was left open. Like, if he was driving, it's beer. But if not, possibly a Verner's.
I hope... What did you say? If he was driving, it's beer?
Oh, sorry. I got that backwards.
Double negatives.
Oh, my God. I might really have a concussion.
Careful.
It's probably only so funny.
Careful. Well, you have health insurance right now, so.
That's true.
Last bit from Aqua.
From Aqua.
In BDX.
Here in Portland, a new transplant. Listening to episode 204. The interactions between Aaron and Anna make me giggle.
Famously, the episode in which they met. Have you gone back to listen to that?
Not for a while.
I think the two of you should sit down and listen to that together. I think it would be entertaining to you.
We have independent of each other gone back and listened to that.
That's good. That's good. Excellent. Aqua also said, hey, what does it take to join Team Sincerity? And I responded on the Twitter just saying, well, are you sincere about things?
Yeah.
Do you like things sincerely? You're in.
You've done it.
But Aqua also wants to take a ride with us someday, so we need to make sure that happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
sadly for Bike Scout, all of our slots are filled, but that doesn't have to be the only Team Sincerity ride.
No.
Matter of fact, we should make one up.
Well, we did
before the summer goes away.
Have the President's Day ride once, but we should... Well, maybe the Team Sincerity ride should be the flat tire ride. I don't know.
There we go.
Team Sincerity teaches you how to fix your flats.
Who wants
giving
to go
back
out
to
the
community
with a flat tire? Yeah, I'm in.
All right.
Let's tell people when this is going to be. Yeah, exactly.
Now.
You work on that, and we'll figure it out. After Palooza. All right. You ready to wrap this thing up?
Sure.
All right. Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter @sprocketpodcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Herb Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to sustaining donors Logan Smith, Johnny K. Shadowfoot,
Katrina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lane, Richard Wazensky, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez,
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, Andy Brunner,
Dave Knows, Chris Smith, Christy Keister,
Caleb Jenkins, and J.P. Cooley, Peanut Butter Jar Matt,
Patrick R. Chain, Sebastian Poole, Marco Lowe,
Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Alderson, Drew the Welder,
Anna, Krista, John Wasserman,
Andre Johnson, Shelley and Troy, King of Division,
Josh Zizin, Richard G. Guthrie Straw,
Christopher Barnett, Brandon Shelby, Campsite,
Aaron Green, Magnus David, Catherine Minchin,
Nathan Poulton, Chris Rawson, Glory Cloves,
Michael Flournoy, Jeremy Kitchen,
now brush your teeth,
and go to bed.
And I'm going to finish this tea.
Yeah. Look at all this time we have.
Yeah. Did you hear how I almost didn't make it through that one person's name?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I'm sure they'll forgive you.
I hope so.
All right.
Good night, everybody. Bye. What's the difference, man? How are we making this now where we never did before?
I think Guthrie, set the precedent.
I think he did. He unlocked it.
He was like the fire that we needed under our ass.
Well, we should thank him personally and with a token of appreciation.
Yes.